Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Alami Podcast, Change Your Company. I'm so excited about our episode today. And I have with me Jake Jacobs. And you are the founder and the CEO of Jake Jacobs Consultancy. You are the author of many books about change, about transformation, about leadership. And you've had like, your whole career in this area. So I'm very excited about this session, about this conversation. We had already some pre-conversation together, but what I noticed is like you have so much wealth of experience. I learned already from that conversation, but I'm really looking forward to this one, which will be more interactive because we're live on LinkedIn. So for welcome to the to this episode, Jake.
Thank you, Fuad. Thank you very much. I really appreciate being invited, and I appreciated our pre-conversation and getting into some of the talk and questions that you raised during that.
Yeah, and the topic of our episode, of our session today, is how to drive change within your team or within the whole organization faster, easier, and for better results. And this is something which I've always been kind of obsessed about, is like how we can improve the change process. Everything is changing. How we can improve the adaptation to the change that's happening around us in organizations. And the tools and the approach that you shared with me is fascinating. So I want to say just to all our listeners, to all the people who are watching, especially live, we are on LinkedIn live here. So please interact with us, ask us questions, make comments. We will answer them. We'll answer every comment. So please do so. And as a start, maybe if you can introduce yourself or share where you are based or where you are watching us from. And meanwhile, what I want to do is I want to just take 1 second and see if I can get the link to the live so people could would be able to see us. 1 second here. So let me see if I got this right. Okay. So sharing it also with you, Jake, so you can have it. Here we go. Okay. So let's get started, and I have the link now there. So let's get started, and maybe if we start a little bit from, how did you get into this work? And you work with large organizations. You facilitated change in organization with thousands of people, and you kind of, again, you develop this approach to make it faster, the process of change, to make it easier and to make it better, delivering better results. So tell us a little bit like how your journey started.
Sure. So Fuad, it started with humble beginnings in a bar in Ann Arbor, Michigan, where I went to the University of Michigan. My first consulting project, I actually arranged to get credit for it, as well as doing a consulting project at the bar. People were complaining at the bar, as they often do at work, about one thing or another. And what I did is I went to the owner of the bar and I said, Norm, would you mind if I did this project in the bar? And he said to me, which was my first consulting contract that I ever had, that's fine, Jacobs, just don't F anything up. So, this was the beginning of my consulting career, and I did some interviews and we did a questionnaire. We talked about things in a couple of meetings about how things could be improved, and there were more shared responsibilities. There were standards set for cleanup, basic things that weren't fancy, but they made a difference. And so in my very first consulting project, I can say was successful. And from there, I had an internship with consultants that were working at Ford around the world on a global culture change effort. And based on that, I was able to get started in this work very early. My first client was 21, and I started working in the consulting firm at 22 and 23. So it's really the only work that I've ever done has been around helping organizations become more effective.
Yeah. So you develop this levers for change And actually, you shared with me the story of the origin of this concept of leveraging. So tell us a little bit about the origin of the concept, and maybe tell us about the 3 to 5 like most powerful levers like leaders have to drive change.
Sure. So this started, I had always believed that leverage was important, because leverage, by definition, is getting large results with little effort. So how do we get a big return on investment for the actions that we're taking? And I had read about this for my honors thesis, and then commissioned a chalk drawing, which is in my office on the wall, of a man named Archimedes. And I don't know if any of your listeners or our listeners today are familiar with Archimedes, but he was a 3rd century BC Greek mathematician. You may have heard of his saying, if not from him, he said, "Give me a lever long enough and a fulcrum on which to place it, and single-handed I shall move the world." And so for those who are on LinkedIn, you can see the cover of the book, which has these people moving the world. And I believe that we can move the world in our arena of change by using these levers, by finding smart strategic actions that you can take, anyone can take, that will make a profound difference in the results that they're achieving, being faster, easier, better. So here's one of the levers, and there is an approach that I call paradoxical change. So most people, when they deal with change, that's what they pay attention to. That's what they deal with. People write books on it. They make speeches. They give presentations. They write articles, all kinds of things. When people are in organizations, they write memos. They have town hall meetings. They have offsite meetings. All of these meetings are focused on change. I take a different approach. I also focus on what not to change. I believe that what I call continuity is just as important as change, and very few people talk about it. So when we talk about continuity, what I mean is finding all the things from the past that you're going to continue doing as you go forward. And if you look at the greatest change efforts, the most changes that organizations make, more things stay the same than change. You may be going to the same place of work. Your work may be similar. Your goals may be similar. Your colleagues may be similar. There are many things about how you do business that stay the same. And what this does is it gives people confidence. It gives people a level of certainty that they're missing when everything's changing. When everything's up in the air, there is what I say, too much change. And that's only a perception. That's only the way that we think about the work that we're doing. So if you think about continuity and you look for opportunities to affirm the way business has been done, if you're writing a memo, I had a client once who, whenever he wrote anything, any communication, any meeting, he started off with, what are the 3 best things that we're going to continue doing that we've done well in the past? Mm-hmm. And so it's very practical, very down to earth. This is not fancy theory. This is pay attention to continuity. Another lever that's really powerful is about how do you deal with change when it's too slow? And a lot of leaders complain about this, feeling like things aren't happening fast enough. And this is a surefire way to accelerate the pace of change. And it's another one where your paradigm, the way that you think about things, gets in your way. So again, the popular way to think about the future is it's something that's out there. You'll arrive at it at a later point in time. We wait for the future. We're in the present. I believe that's a problem. I think that slows down the pace of change. What we need to do instead, Fawad, is think and act as if the future were now. So what do I mean by that? That means that we need to, in our mind, have a picture of what the future looks like. And any picture will work. It doesn't have to be the entire picture mapped out, the entire canvas painted with all of the colors, a perfect picture. Any small element you have of the way that you want to do business in the future, think and act as if that future were today. And then start behaving as if you're in that future. So I had a client who was very interested in getting along. They had a home office, and they had around the world, they had different locations, and they were in conflict with each other, the home office and the different locations. And so I said to them, what does the ideal relationship look like? And they were each very quick to describe what this looked like and that they would be listened to. They understood it from their perspective, but not from the other. So they would be listened to, they would be respected, their opinions would matter, they would have influence over setting the goals. And I said to each of them, I said, pretend right now that that is true, that that future that you've envisioned is today's reality. Now, how do you need to behave to be consistent with that reality that you've just envisioned? And they both came up with very long lists of things that they could start doing. In fact, that they needed to start doing to make that reality, that future, a reality. And so they started to listen to each other differently. They had joint goal setting meetings. They had problem solving meetings, but not the kind where you get on opposite sides of the table and you negotiate. I'll give a little, you give a little, and eventually you find something in the middle that everybody can live with. This is not about living with something. This is about thriving. And so with this lever, what we say is go for the biggest, brightest future you can and start to behave as if that were your current reality. And what you find is that change happens a lot faster. It's difficult to discern what's the present and what's the future when you're behaving as if the future were now. And when you look around in an organization, I have something that I measure called the believability index. How serious do I think leaders are about the changes they're talking about? And when there's evidence that there's changes, there's proof. And so we go and we look and we say, hey, when I see somebody on the right or left of me changing and doing business in new ways because they're thinking and acting this way, my believability index goes up. I trust more that something serious is going on here. And so I'll take a little bit of a risk. I'll start to behave differently. And as people on either side of me start making different decisions and start acting in different ways, I find that my own confidence and my own behavior starts to change. So this has a virtual cycle to it. The more that everybody in an organization thinks and acts as if the future were now, the faster change occurs.
Excellent. So I think this is this idea about acting as the future is now. I mean, when I reflect on it, it empowers people. First of all, makes them feel what would be the impact of this change and associate with it. And then second is empowers them to start co-creating it or creating it.
Absolutely.
And this is it's a great way of doing it. Actually, it reminds me of something I read about once, which is a success practice, which is they people get together and each one will come and then they live their future vision and they act as if they're already living it. And what happened is it's like a special event, and everyone starts to kind of connect more to his or her personal vision.
Absolutely.
And after the event ends, it's like they can't help it, but they wanna live this vision every day.
Yeah, and it's very motivating. And what Fouad can work for one person can work for 1,000. So if everybody in an organization, and even I had a meeting once with 1,000 people on the floor of the New Orleans Superdome, and we practiced this same behavior of thinking and acting as if the future were now, which is one of the levers in the book. That change started to take hold immediately in that organization. 1,000 out of 1,400 people were there in the room at the Superdome. And so the culture itself was taking shape before their very eyes. And you're very motivated. When you have a picture of the future that you desire, a vision of what you want, if I could tell you and tell your listeners, you can have that sooner, people listen. They pay attention. They want to find a way to live that future and to do it faster. And this lever in particular is the best one to do it. And like you said, even at an individual level, you can have people have that personal vision and be able to live into it. You don't have to get it right all the time, every time, but any time that you make progress on it, you get points. It changes people's perception of reality when you start accelerating the pace that change occurs.
That's great. And regarding the first one that you shared, which is about the level of uncertainty, and I from my work, I realized that actually this we have these two needs, which is we have the need for certainty, which is a basic need, but we have a need also for uncertainty, because if we are certain all the time, it becomes boring. So change, if done the right way, is approached with the right mindset, with the right tool set, and approaches that you're sharing is, it's fulfilling a need that everyone, every employee has. So it's powerful, right? And managing this too, this paradox of uncertainty, certainty, is so powerful. When we get comfortable with it, we can go and I like how you say, remind people about what will not change, because then they can, it's a frame, the change is framed in a bigger picture, which says okay, well, all this will stay. This is what we're going to change.
That's exactly right, Fuad. And I think a lot of what I talk about in the book, in the levers, is about a new paradigm. It's about a different way of looking at traditional situations and saying, let's turn them on their heads. Here's one other, you asked for two or three. This one is on how you deal with situations where people don't know enough to make good decisions. So you see people digging their heels in because they believe they're right. And in fact, the more that I care about the future of the organization, the more I'm going to dig my heels in, the more committed I am to the cause. And my cause ultimately is the same as yours. But in the meantime, we have disagreements. And so creating a common database is about sharing information across the organization that needs to be shared. So I'm not saying everybody needs to know everything. That's overwhelming. And in fact, I had a client once who said, listen, I just got 50 emails in the last 10 minutes, and getting more information is not what I want. Getting the information I need is what I want. And so finding out what is it that people need to know to do their jobs better, and providing them that information, is what Create a Common Database is about. And it's different information for different people in different situations. So getting smart about that and sharing information broadly, they say information is power. I believe that's true. And I believe that must be shared widely, that power. Mm-hmm. But when you find that there's information that you have that a colleague needs, it could be in your team, it could be in your function, it could be in your business. But when you have information that others need and you're not sharing it, you're actually keeping a secret. Mm-hmm. And we learned early on in life that keeping secrets was not nice. And so when you think of even being a small child, your parents told you don't keep secrets from people. This is true in organizations, that when I know information that others need to know, it's my responsibility to reach out and tell them. They don't know what they don't know. And so it's my job to reach out and help educate them so that they can make more informed decisions about whatever strategy or act they're going to take.
Yeah. So I see we have some viewers watching us live. So please, if you have questions, if you have comments about what we are sharing, please write in the chat. We will be commenting on this. And so you've done this like a large scale workshops, which to me is like I haven't like seen something like this at such large scale. So you like I learned that you've done like this like 1,000 like people in workshops at the same time. And what were the purpose of these workshops? Like what kind of objectives you were trying to achieve?
Sure. In each of them, there's another lever called design it yourself, which says that every change effort needs to have its own unique purpose, its own unique outcomes, and its own unique roadmap. When we worked with the 1,000 people, they were in what they call the death spiral. So they were getting less investment from corporate, which meant that they could invest less in being competitive in the marketplace. And as they were less competitive in the marketplace, they got less return on assets, which then led corporate to invest less in them because they weren't as good an investment and they got less competitive and they got less money. So they were headed down the tubes. What the purpose of the 1,000 person meeting essentially was to save their business. What could they do? What actions could they take collectively that would save their business? And they came up with 10 actions over a 3-day meeting. So when we talk about workshops, when I talk about workshops, I mean roll up the sleeves decision-making meetings. These are carefully designed with a group that's representative of the group that's coming. We think through all of the possible responses that people could make, and we plan for those up front so that we're ready for them. If things change and go a different direction, we thought about that, and we know what we're going to do next. With this group of 1,000, they actually worked through, and we sat for 2 hours, Fuad, in a consensus dialogue with 1,000 people. So I was up front and I said, table 37, you have a contribution to make. Table 63, you're next. So we get people in table groups of 8. And when you have 1,000 people, that's a lot of table groups of 8. So we would call them out one at a time and people would stand up and say, I'd like to see XYZ. And then we said to them, if you're in favor of this change, stand and clap. If you are not in favor of this change, sit and hiss. Now, there's something special about hissing. I'll demonstrate. You can't tell who's hissing. So there's an anonymity. If people are hissing and saying, I don't agree with this idea, that literally in the room, you can tell. When it was close, when you couldn't tell which way it was going to go, we sent delegations out of the room and we said, work through this issue and come back with a combined point of view that you can propose to the 1,000. And as they worked through this, they circled in on a few key things that they could do that would make a difference in their business. And it worked. Most importantly, 9 months from having said, let's change. So this is not from this meeting of 1,000 people. We had a meeting before that of 300 people around leadership alignment. Normally, you think of leadership alignment being 20 or 25 of the senior leaders. We asked this group, who needs to be involved for this effort to be successful in terms of leadership? And we went away for the weekend. It was over the 4th of July weekend. And when we came back, we said, okay, give us the list. And they tossed on the table this huge stack of papers. And we said, I don't think you understand correctly. We just said the people who need to provide leadership. There were 300 names on the list out of 1,400 people in the company. And we said, we don't think you understood. We weren't clear about this. And they said, Jake, I think you don't understand. You told us to give us the leaders that are needed for the effort to succeed. It's 300 people and their names are on this list. So we had a leadership alignment event, a two-day event where they did personal feedback with each other. They said, what is it that I need, Fawad, for you to do differently for this effort to succeed? And you said, Jake, what do I need differently from you? Very personal, very individual feedback. And what they came up with was the answer. What needed to be done by leaders for this to succeed? So this was all before the 1,000-person event. And when we had the 1,000-person event, they came up with these 10 actions, listening to each other in a two-hour consensus debate. So when we were done with that, Fawad, people were on the same page. They knew what their job was. They knew what their commitments were. Everybody was headed in the same direction. And 9 months from starting, they had turned their return on fixed assets around. They had launched a new business and selling and sharing services. They had boats and other resources that weren't being used. They made tremendous progress in a very short period of time, because when you have 1,000 people pulling the boat in the same direction, you move a lot faster.
That's excellent. I see, it's a great example about how involving people, how facing the truth, how taking action and limited number of actions is so powerful to drive the whole organization forward. So I think the question I have for you is, what could a leader of a team, a small team even, could learn from this? What are the practices that they can adopt to help them take their teams or drive some change within their team or take them to a new level of performance?
Sure. I'm going to give what sounds like a simple answer, which is very difficult to do. So the answer is to listen and ask questions. Now, when you're a leader and you're under pressure, you need to make decisions. And what I say in the book, and I say to my clients, is there are four magic words that if more leaders could remember these, more organizations would be successful. So my four magic words are, could you say more? Mm-hmm. Now, what this does is a couple of things. One, you learn, because people will say more and you'll have more context, you'll have more understanding, you'll have a depth of appreciation of the complexity that people are dealing with. The other important thing that happens is you create an invitation for them to share what they know. When I ask you, Fawad, could you say more about what you meant when you said XYZ, you're going to feel invited to say more. It's going to become a safer space for you to share information. I had a client once who had a problem with a direct report, and I said to the leader, when they come in, could you just try out, because they were ready to tell the direct report what the expectations were, what resources they had available, how they were falling short, how they needed to improve their performance. I said, this person already knows all that. What you don't know is why this is all happening. So pause and say, could you say more at the very beginning? And from that, you can learn. And when you can learn, you make more informed decisions. And more informed decisions, in my world, Fawad, are more strategic decisions. They're smarter ones for the individual, the team, and the organization. And so those four magic words, and then you have to be genuine in listening to them. It doesn't mean you have to do everything that everybody says, but consider it. Weigh the trade-offs. Engage this person in your decision-making process so that they understand that you're not just being a nice person by asking and trying to make them feel good. You're taking their information seriously and factoring it into a much more complex decision that you need to make.
Yeah, I think this is great. And somehow it reflects also my experience working with hundreds and then thousands of leaders and frontliners. And the fact that involving people is so powerful, facing the truth is so powerful, creating a space for this to happen and to accelerate it is so powerful. And I think, again, even like today, doing this virtually, it's possible, and it's possible even to do it like on a larger scale. And the idea is, and I think this is something which is for a leader of a team, is one thing you want to think about it is like maybe every like period of time, for example, 6 months or so, just take the team together and say like, hey, how it's going, and be curious and be open and be like be ready to hear even things that you don't want to hear. Maybe I remember I did this like with like one of my teams early on in my career leadership experience, and they said things I didn't want to, you know, hear, but being there and say like, oh, exactly what you said now, which is tell me more about it, and being comfortable with that. And if you do it in a sincere way, people, they would be like, wow, I'm being listened to, my voice matters. And then what will be the outcome of this? People will be more owning what comes out of it, and there will be more impact, more results, and the workplace will be more fulfilling. So it's amazing.
Yeah, the other thing, Fuad, I think that's helpful is that as a leader, if you're starting to want to interrupt somebody,
yeah,
if you're starting to want to say, you don't understand, there's more going on here, let me explain the other part of the situation. What you're suggesting we tried last year and it didn't work before you joined the team. All of these things that you're going to say, if you start with, could you say more, it interrupts your interrupting. Yeah. So it's a fail-safe way to make sure that the other person continues to talk a little bit more before you start. And because the power dynamics are different and people who are higher in the hierarchy have more power, people listen to them more. As soon as you start interrupting somebody who is a direct report of yours or someone on your team, they will talk that much less into the future, and they will leave that meeting and they will tell people that you're an interrupter. That yeah. you don't listen, that you don't pay attention. Yeah. And so if you get a reputation for saying, could you say more? I've had clients that have been teased about this. They've said it so much. And they're like, they go in and somebody says, you want me to say more, don't you? And the leader says, yes, I do. And yeah. they can joke about it. But the seriousness is that there's a genuine interest, like you said. And when you start to get a little fidgety and your patience starts to wear a little thin and you want to get to the point, that's the time when yeah. you need to say, could you say more?
Yeah. And of course, when it becomes this part of your habit, people will believe it more and they will be more open, and because they need to trust you. And once you create this trust, it's so powerful. I see a comment from Satish here. Saying taking feedback is critical, absolutely. And I think there is a power of getting this feedback not only on a interpersonal, like one-to-one level, but taking it as a leader with a group of people. And you've done this, Jake. I've done this. The power of the leader standing in front of the room and sharing like situation. It could be a strategy, it could be a vision, it could be values, it could be a problem, and saying, what do you think about it, is different than having the one-to-one. And of course, you become more vulnerable because it a little bit, it's exposing you as a leader. But standing there and being open and being curious about the input and sincere about doing something based on that is something that I can accelerate. I've seen it accelerating change, accelerating implementation, accelerating improvement in a way which is so powerful. So do you agree with this?
Yeah. The more people, Fuad, that you can do that in front of, the faster things happen. So I have expertise in working in large groups. Not only have I worked with 1,000 people, we had a merger client that had two cultures that were very different from each other. And we had a global tour of different regions where we had, there are 37,000 people in this company. We had meetings regionally with 250 people each. Yeah. So this was the start of the effort. And in this 250, some of the people were from that region. And then the other two-thirds came from around the world. So they had a mini company at each of these events. And they brought forward the mission, vision, and values. And they said to people, after they'd educated them on the business and what the issues were and what the strategy was, and they said, what do you think of our mission, vision, and values? And they took that input and compiled it across all five of these meetings. And out of that, the senior leaders came to agreement on what the answer was going to be for each of those questions. In fact, at the meeting when they were reviewing this input, they had a debate about whether they should go one way or another with one of the values. And one of the people attending the meeting said, what did the people tell us should be the answer? And it was quite obvious what the answer was supposed to be from the people, and they stopped their argument. But even in a 37,000 person organization, touching 1,000 people or 1,200 people, still not a lot. So we implemented something that came from our planning team that was around people talking about the new values every month. And they said, where have I seen this value occurring right now in the organization? Where could I see it in the future? And what can I do to live it today? And 37,000 people engaged in that conversation all around the company on all of the values month by month. And so that's where we touch the hearts and minds of 37,000 people. Not everybody could come to these large group meetings, even though there were 250 people at them, but they could decide for themselves. First, continuity, where have we seen this before? Then the vision, where could we see it in the future? And then the implementation, what can I do to start living this value more right now?
I like in all your approach how you always empower people to think about what they can do versus what the others could do. Absolutely. I think this is extremely powerful. And the way you also accelerate people living the values by making them talk about it, talk about how they gonna do things differently, I think is so powerful. Now I want to go into like the second part of this conversation, which is some personal reflections. So with your career and working with all this large organization and leaders, what's the success habit that helped you to make this impact, to reach this level of your work? What's one success habit or couple that helped you throughout the year?
Well, one of the most important, Fuad, I has found is challenging my own assumptions. So I don't do this just with clients to say, let's take a paradoxical approach and pay attention to continuity instead of only to change. But what's good for the client is good for the consultant. So there are many times when I look at a situation, and I had a client once in one of these large group meetings where we were talking about the mission and the vision and values and the future direction, and there was not an endorsement. People did not stand and clap at the end, and they thought they were going to. And so it went silent. Everybody was quiet when they said, what do you think of this future? Silent. So what does a good consultant do during this time? Call for a break. So we had no idea what was going on. We called for a break. And in the break, we decided that we needed to basically say, could you say more? what is going on out there that people are not behind this? What we found out was that people said, we need you, the leadership team, to say hello in the hallways when you see us. Now, I was up front, and there was a part of me, I must say, that was saying, that's the issue. Like, we have this whole company and we need to be successful, and you're not getting hellos in the hallways. So that was me not paying attention to the client. The client, the assumption is what's important to them is what matters. And what this was saying was something much deeper. They were talking about not being treated as human beings, not being valued, not being seen as peers in some way to this leadership team. And they went down the line one by one with the general manager of the property. It was a hotel property, and saying, will you say hello in the hallways? And one by one, the leadership team agreed to say hello in the hallways. And at the end of this, there was a man in the back who stood up, and he said, we love you, Ms. McCool. Now, Ms. McCool was the woman who was the general manager. And that level of my own assumption being, this is not a big issue, why are we bothering with this? I needed to challenge myself, because it was a bigger issue than I gave it credit for. So even though I go through life asking, could you say more? Is this something that's real? How about if we challenge that assumption that you know what somebody else is thinking? It's good for me to have those assumptions challenged too. And that's one of the things that I found has helped me be most successful in my career, is knowing that I don't know all the answers.
That's great, yeah. So what's one advice you have for leaders, like senior leaders, but also young leaders, leaders who want to reach the top, who are ambitious, who are aspiring to make bigger impact?
Learn. And continue learning. So when we talk about joining this Facebook Live, podcasts, books, articles, conversations with colleagues, presentations, conferences, all of these are different places to learn. Even journaling on your own to reflect on how did the day go and what did I learn today that I can use tomorrow. Ongoing learning is one of the most powerful ways to improve your capacity and your competence, and finding things that you're interested in that are relevant for the work you are doing. I came back to my hometown where I live now in Toledo, Ohio. I spent a year studying happiness. Now, there are a lot of books. Martin Seligman, for your listeners, is the father of positive psychology. And I studied him at university, and he was working on learned helplessness on the way. So what is it that we do that we learn that we have no power? This was what he was studying back in the 80s. And then he moved on to studying learned optimism. Now, this is what is it that we do to better understand and adopt an optimistic standpoint? And most recently, he came out with a book called Flourishing. And flourishing was beyond optimism. It was your whole life working well for you. And so even when I look at Martin Seligman and my year of studying happiness, I needed some work in this area, so I studied about it. Mm-hmm. But Martin Seligman is a great example for me, because he started with learned helplessness. Then he went to optimism. Then he went to flourishing. So here's a man who had a name in the field and could have continued working with helplessness. There's a lot of, unfortunately, helpless people that could benefit from that. But he continued his own learning, his own studying, his own research, and advanced the cause. So I think that learning would be where I put my dollar down for your listeners and say, this is what's most important to pay attention to going forward.
Yeah, and I love the way you talked about it, that learning is not only from books, but learning from your experience, reflecting. I love this quote, I read it once, which says, we don't learn from experience, we learn from reflecting on experience. So journaling is a powerful tool, getting feedback, seeking also, like, looking at other industries, looking at other teams, learning from them. This is learning from observation is so powerful. So my last question to you is, what's a legacy that you like to leave behind?
My legacy, I would like to be about empowering others to create their preferred future faster, easier, and better. So whatever it is, and this can be for an entire company, it can be for your team, it can be for you as an individual, but to know what you want in the future, to have an image of what you prefer. There was a man, Ron Lippitt, who did research on preferred futuring versus problem solving. Mm-hmm. And it's much more powerful to envision what you want for the future and to move towards that than it is to try and solve the problem that you're suffering from today. And so having people have that preferred future and then not settling for having a picture of it, but actually creating it, living into it, making it part of your everyday life and everybody whose lives you impact. That is the legacy I would like to leave, is that they would say, Jake Jacobs is somebody who's helped me do that.
Jake, it's been like really pleasure, and I've learned so much from this conversation. I love the mission that you are on, which is all about helping leaders and organizations to transform, to change, to improve, to drive higher performance, but based on people engagement, based on people involvement, based on being more human and creating a better future for the people of the organization as well. And this is what this podcast is all about. So thank you so much for being my guest today and for sharing these insights.
Thank you so much, Fuad, for having me. I appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you. And thank you to all the people who are watching us and who will be listening to us. If you haven't subscribed to the podcast, please do so and leave a rating. And I would love to hear like any comments you have about it. You can leave a comment there as well on the podcast on Apple or Spotify. Until the next one, please stay inspired and make the biggest impact you could make as a leader, as an influencer within your organization. You can drive change. You can make it better, faster, easier. So drive it, involve people, make an impact beyond even your team and help your whole organization move forward. Until the next one, please take care. Bye.